All right, let's come back to order. The time is almost 3:40 p.m. Central Time, and we are back on the record. A couple of housekeeping tasks before we move forward. Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco, during the break, brought to my attention that Commissioner Christman asked for a couple of documents, and that should be entered into the record and identified for late file exhibits. And Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco, would you please say again what those are?
I'm not sure if the company, that one was the return on the pension, the return that's applied to the pension or assumed expected return on a pension, correct?
Right.
And then the second portion is what I don't recall.
As well as how well the pension is funded.
It's funded, okay. And I don't know if that's going to be one document or two, but.
Mr. Johnson.
I suspect it will be all part of one document. To get that information, we will be going to more than one source, but I do not perceive any difficulty in putting that together. I know what you're talking about, or we know what you're talking about with respect to the level of funding that has been achieved. The EROA, which is what you were referring to, is a single number. We just can't remember exactly what it is right now.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Norrell, I assume there is no objection?
No objection.
All right, that will be admitted into the record as late filed Exhibit M. All right, and one other quick housekeeping task. We have two more witnesses for the company and then one by telephone, so three. They're all expected to be relatively short. We are going to take those three witnesses, and then we are going to adjourn for the day at the conclusion of the company's case, and then reconvene tomorrow take the case for the PSC advocacy staff tomorrow.
What time, Your Honor, are we going to convene tomorrow? Regular 9 o'clock?
Yes, it appears that 9 o'clock.
I would throw out there 8:30 if there's consensus in the group, just an extra half hour.
No objection from advocacy staff, Your Honor.
All right, everyone seems in agreement. We will reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning. All right, and hopefully that will get us through the day to complete testimony on this case. And kind of see where we go from there. All right. At this time, then, I believe, is it Ms. Valley? You are going to be calling this next witness, Mr. Pepin?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. We will call Michael Pepin.
Mr. Pepin. I'm not sure you were here earlier when I instructed as to penalties for perjury.
I heard both down below and from the room downstairs.
All right. Very good. Then please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
I do, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Would you like me to proceed, Your Honor? Or
1 second. I believe we have the witness statement, which is stipulated as agreed to for admission as Exhibit NSP 32. That is admitted. And now please proceed, Ms. Valley.
Thank you. Mr. Pepin, your pre-filed direct testimony has been admitted to the record as Exhibit 20 in this proceeding. Do you have any corrections to your testimony today?
No, I do not.
Please proceed with your opening statement.
My name is Mike Pepin. I'm employed by Xcel Energy as a principal pricing analyst in the Regulatory Analysis Department. The reason for my appearance today is that I'm responsible for conducting the class cost of service studies for the company's rate cases. In general, the purpose of a class cost of service study is to take detailed costs that have been allocated to a given jurisdiction, in this case North Dakota, and allocate those costs to each customer class using class allocation factors. The ultimate goal that we strive for in our class cost of service study is to identify and develop class cost allocation factors that most accurately reflects what cost each cost to incur. For example, the cost of electric meters is directly driven by the number of customers in each customer class, along with the average cost of meters for each customer class. In general, the methods we've used in our class cost of service study were the same methods we've used for over the last 20 years with some minor revisions. Those revisions are detailed on pages 2 through 4 of my direct testimony. The final results of the class cost of service study are then used by Mr. Huso as a guide when designing retail rates. We believe our class cost of service study is an appropriate rate-making tool because it is theoretically sound and that it properly recognizes that our investments in baseload generation provide benefits to all customers, particularly our energy-intensive customers, and therefore allocates production costs as partially capacity and partially energy-driven. It also accurately reflects the value of our peaking capacity, transmission, and distribution facilities, and recognizes the differing impacts that time usage patterns can have on the cost of service. In addition to the class cost of service study, my testimony supports a rate design change to our voltage discounts to better reflect cost and a minor wording change to one of our tariffs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pepin.
Thank you, Your Honor. The witness is available for cross.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Pepin. I just have one question, and if you've been following, it's the question that we've been asking for about 24 hours, and followed it down the line, and I guess the buck stops with you, and the question would be, why is North Dakota projected to be a winter peaking state or jurisdiction this year?
Well, I spoke to the folks in our load research area who are the experts in this area, and they did tell me that that North Dakota's system coincident peak that's coincident with the system peak has been narrowing between winter and summer, with winter still edging out the summer peak. However, in the last 20 years, there's only been, I think, 4 years, they said, that the summer peak has surpassed the winter peak. One was in the early 90s, and then in 2010 through 12, with other 3 years. Their explanation for those last 3 years was that due to higher temperature humidity levels, which caused the summer peak to surpass the winter peak. In the 2013 forecast, which was shown in Mr. Brocken's testimony, the winter peak is expected to exceed the summer peak under normal weather, I think by 20 megawatts.
So. No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle.
Yes, Jerry gave me a bunch of questions. does your class cost of service, your cost of service study incorporate a minimum distribution system methodology?
Yes, it does.
Okay, and that assigns a portion of distribution system cost to the customer component, correct?
Yes.
Doesn't that inflate the costs assigned to the customer?
I wouldn't say it inflates the cost, but it accurately assigns the cost to the customer component as opposed to the demand component.
As opposed to what? I didn't hear.
The demand component.
But in your mind, it doesn't assign too many costs to the customer?
It does classify the customer portion as being customer-related, if that's your question.
Well, my question is whether that unreasonably inflates what is assigned to that customer class. So, and you're saying in your mind it doesn't.
Yeah, the theory behind the minimum system study is that there are certain costs that are incurred just to hook up the customer to the distribution system, a minimum size facility, and that's what we're trying to identify with that minimum system study, and therefore classify those costs as customer related.
Now, could you use a different, could you allocate like a 12CP method allocator to assign costs?
You could. I don't think we'd want to do that for the customer component, though.
Why?
Because those costs are driven by number of customers, not demand.
Explain that a little more.
Going back to my earlier explanation, we're assuming that there's a certain amount of cost involved. Just hook up a customer. You know, you need to get a wire in the ground, that service, you know, a minimum size wire just to hook up that customer. And we're attempting to split out that minimum cost, that's required. Just hook up the customer and classify that as being customer related.
If you used.
And if I could just clarify that, that's. cost just by adding customers, that minimum cost.
Okay. If you use 12 CP, wouldn't it increase the allocation to the CNI class and reduce it to residential?
Well, the load factor residential is actually lower than CNI, so it would also shift costs to residential as well.
I don't understand how that would happen. Can you explain?
Well, the residential customers place a demand on the system as well, so they would bear part of those costs too. And in fact, since their demand chart, their load factor is lower than residential, which meaning their energy use in relation to their demand is low, they would bear a significant share of those costs.
Okay, I was just thinking it the opposite result, so I'm having trouble following. What you can you tell me why it's not opposite? Well, because you just said because their demand is, what did you say?
Their
load is low in relation to demand, or the other way around?
Yeah, their energy use in relation to the load they place on the system is low. I'm sorry, high.
Okay, and therefore, using that demand allocator.
They would also bear those demand costs using a 12 CP allocator.
I'll let it go at that. I'm still not sure I follow, but I'm going to let it go at that. Thanks.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I have no questions.
Oops, sorry. I have no questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk? Commissioner Christman?
No, Your Honor.
Any redirect, Ms. Valley?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norrell?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ms. Valley, I believe you are also examining the next witness, Stephen Huso.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. We will call Steve Huso to the stand.
This is the third Stephen. All right. Do you have a witness statement for Mr. Huso? All right. While that's being passed out, Mr. Huso, have you heard me instruct as to penalties for perjury?
Yes, I have.
Thank you. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth under pains and penalties of perjury?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you. And I believe this witness statement is NSP Exhibit 33. And as previously stipulated to, it is admitted into the record. Thank you. Ms. Valley, please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Huso, your pre-filed direct and rebuttal testimony has been entered into the record as Exhibits 21 and 22 in this proceeding. Do you have any corrections to your written testimony today?
No, I don't.
Thank you. Please proceed with your opening statement.
Thank you. I'm a pricing consultant for the company. My direct testimony supports the current revenue forecast based on test year sales and customers under the current rate schedules. I also recommended customer class revenue responsibility and a proposed rate design to recover the test year revenue requirement. I also sponsor the company's proposed rate schedules and tariffs, including the rate design structure for a proposed new transmission cost rider. Proposed class revenues were based on the results of our jurisdictional cost study allocated to rate classes using our class cost service study. Individual rates for the rate schedules were based on cost as developed by the class cost study, moderated where appropriate for rate moderation and other pricing considerations. My customer class revenue recommendation, along with the cost-based rate design proposals in my direct testimony, were supported by advocacy staff consultant Dr. Pavlovic, who recognize the value of giving our customers reasonable and accurate price signals. My rebuttal testimony responds to Dr. Pavlovich's recommendations to eliminate certain time-of-day rate schedules, to establish a single customer charge for residential customers, and to simplify our rate schedules and the language used to describe our rates. I do not support eliminating those rate options that currently have no customers, but instead recommend closing those rates to new customers. Closing the rates without eliminating them at this time would provide us with an opportunity to evaluate whether those rate options should be permanently closed or whether the rates should instead be maintained or modified. I do not agree that the residential time-of-day rate should be eliminated, but would like to work with Commission staff to identify and address their concerns about this rate option. The company does not object to having a single residential customer charge if it is set at an appropriate level, and I offer two alternative rates that would be reasonable. I propose working with Commission staff to identify more specifically the concerns with our current rate structure and descriptions and to making improvements as appropriate. Thank you, and I look forward to answering your questions.
The witness is available for cross-examination.
Thank you, Ms. Valley. Mr. Norrell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Mr. Husso.
Good afternoon.
I just have a couple quick questions. One of them you had highlighted about was helping to make descriptions more clear. Could you pull your proposed tariff? I'm looking at, this would be section number 5, the second revised sheet number 12.
Could I ask someone to bring the proposed tariffs up? That's, I think, a separate notebook. But it was section 5, sheet number 12?
Yep. Okay. Second revised sheet number 12, that's correct.
Okay, I have that.
It says rules for application of residential rates at the top. Is that correct?
Yes.
Item number 9. Could you tell me how I would know if I was a farm service customer or a residential service customer under this language?
This particular example, I think, is an excellent example of a good point made by the Dr. Pavlovich. It really is a reference to a rate schedule that we had eliminated perhaps, you know, well over 10 years ago, a separate farm service rate. And it was included to make that transition more clear where those customers would be placed in terms of the different rate options. And I think, you know, by now it's time that we could clean that up and perhaps eliminate that particular section number.
My last question would just be, you expressed a willingness to work with Commission on cleaning up this language. Is that common for the commissions to get involved in cleaning up tariff language, or is there a reason why the company couldn't handle this on its own?
I cannot answer the first part of your question. We really have not had much experience in having this issue brought forward by regulatory staff or consultants. There are several instances in our overall tariffs where the language could be improved and clarified, but as I stated in my rebuttal testimony, there are still several arcane terms and instances where it's really necessary to retain the precision and the clarity that is provided by that language. So on a careful, close review of our entire set of tariff pages, it is possible to identify instances like these, which really, I think, don't get the attention they probably deserve, except at times where, I think about 10 years ago, we did a complete revision of our tariffs, or at least a reformatting of our tariffs. And so there are a number of instances, clearly, that could there could be eliminations, improvements, clarifications. At the same time, there are some limitations on how much and how feasible it is to make changes from the standpoint of simplicity. I mean, there's a certain need for technical specifications.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
I just wondered why the company would prefer closing the tariff as opposed to eliminating. What's the difference? If you decide you need it back, you just file it again.
That's a good question, and it is a somewhat subtle distinction in that closing a tariff is typically a transitional step towards canceling it. So it is principally a matter of timing. And in this case, we really did not have enough time, we felt, to fully explore and consider the pros and cons of the suggestions to cancel the filings. And so to allow ourselves the opportunity to evaluate the potential for a tariff, thought it would be a more practical approach to go slow, close a rate schedule. And, of course, once it's closed, then we know further customers can take that option. And if there are already no customers, unless – for example, between the time a commission order comes out and the rate sheets actually go into effect a couple of months later, then it's an easier transition to cancel it. But just again, the principal reason was simply to give the matter greater consideration. And then there is also a second factor is that establishing a tariff requires a lot more procedural and administrative steps than unclosing a tariff, for example.
You could just let it go, too. I mean, if you actually had a customer that wanted it, then maybe it should stay, and you don't. So you could just let it go while you're thinking about it, correct? I'm just curious as to why we would do anything with it until you decided whether to continue it or not.
By letting it go, do you mean just not even close it?
Right. But be thinking about doing what you said you were going to be doing, assessing whether it's something that should stay or go. Just a question.
That is another reasonable option. Our response to close the tariffs really was intended to show what we thought was some agreement with the consultant's approach that we really should evaluate some of these tariffs and seriously consider whether they should be canceled.
Yeah. I have no idea how you go about closing a tariff, so that was why I had the question. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. This time we'll go to the commission. Commissioner Fedorchik.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. We couldn't go two in a row.
We could, but...
Could. Steve, thank you for your testimony. I just have one line of questions dealing with the transmission cost recovery rider. I don't know if it's a good idea or not, so I need to be convinced one way or the other. So what was the idea behind starting this rider from your perspective? What was the benefit the company was hoping to gain?
Well, the purpose really was to establish a rate design and a rate structure and a rate schedule that would be available should we subsequently make a filing to include costs for recovery under a transmission cost recovery rider and establish a unit rate for that rider. My role was really limited to the rate design of the rider and the structure and the terms and conditions that we felt would be helpful to have established so that if subsequently we did make a filing for a rider that I believe could be considered separately, but at least the mechanism for recovering the cost would be established.
In your testimony, I think it's 15 page, you talked about later in 2013, we will separately seek approval to recover these transmission costs beginning January 2014. So does that mean you have another rate case coming, or what do you mean by that?
Ms. Hoyer could address that, but since I'm the last witness, and I already have the understanding of the potential timing, I understand our plan. If we do make a filing for costs to be recovered through a transmission cost rider, would be later this year.
So if we approve the rider per se, you then maybe would then request recovery later in the year. Okay. We have riders that we use, the commission does with other investor owns for things like wind, and there's some real benefits to them, but there's some drawbacks too. When you talk transmission, are you talking 115 kV and higher for the line size?
I think that's outside my expertise.
Okay. As far as MISO and potential changes in the cost allocation for transmission, would that be yours to answer or would that be Ann's?
No, my role in this is really very limited to just establishing a mechanism and a structure.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Christman.
Sir, what did you say about an agriculture rate or a farm rate? Or tell me that again.
We, at one time, did have a separate farm service rate, which was very similar to the residential service rate, and it has been canceled, I think, for over 20 years. But if I recall, the only distinction was a higher customer charge that reflected the longer or the higher cost level for farm customers.
But so it was discontinued 20 years or more ago?
That's correct.
So why are we talking about it?
There's a reference to it that was established, I believe, at the time it was canceled to direct and clarify where customers that were farm customers that were formerly served on a separate farm service rate, what rate they would be served on once the rate was canceled. Just simply to clarify that the default rate would go to residential service rather than some other rate, such as a commercial and industrial tariff.
So those customers, I presume they're farms that happen to be right along one of your lines, and so those rare customers are currently paying a residential rate, and eliminating that is not going to up their individual rates or lower their individual rates. They're not even going to notice, right?
That's correct, and even when it was in effect, the distinction or the rate differentials were very subtle. And I think, if I recall, it was to their advantage to transfer to residential service. I think the energy charges were the same, and the residential customer charge was slightly less than that for farm service.
I have no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any redirect, Ms. Valley?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
Nothing, thank you.
Once more to the commissioners, any follow-up?
Your Honor, no follow-up, but we may have to have Ms. Ann H. Howard, sorry, come back up and talk about the transmission rider.
Ann Hoyer?
Ann Hoyer, there we go.
All right, Mr. Huso, you're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, shall we do that before we go to the telephone witness?
It'll be very short, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Hoyer, since you're here and available, let's recall you for some questions. I will ask you to go ahead, Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ann, thank you for coming back up here. And sorry I didn't ask this before. You heard my question about cost allocation changes with MISO. When you envision this rider, like I said, I'm still trying to see if I think it's a good idea or not. I can see how you can save some time and resources for all of us. You flow through the cost based on how much energy people use. But how would we the rider address changes inside MISO cost allocation that we would disagree with as a commission that all of a sudden get passed if we could be in the arguing phase with MISO? It's been a significant point of discussion, cost allocation, with this commission and MISO. I don't want to have a tariff, a rider in place that all of a sudden something happens inside of MISO that changes cost allocation that could immediately get passed through to our customers while we're fighting that in, let's say, a court situation. Mm-hmm. That's the real setup question. Mm-hmm. How would you envision something like that playing out so we would not have that flowing through to the customer if we were litigating that cost allocation change?
Included in the 2013 test year are costs for transmission expense as well as transmission revenues billed or recovered from MISO as well as transmission expenses that are billed to us from MISO. A part of those transmission revenues and expenses are those related to regionally shared and cost allocated transmission projects, and those are commonly referred to as RECB or regional expansion criteria and benefits. That's what RECB stands for.
Right.
Those costs, right, and net revenues. Or net expense, I think it is included in the test year. So what we would do, and it's consistent with the North Dakota Century Code statute, is ask for sort of a true-up of those costs in the this TCR rider. But we would submit a request to the commission to recover transmission projects as well as the that are above and beyond costs included in base rates, as well as these transmission revenues and expenses. So, and we would do that annually. And as a part of your review of that, our request, you would have the ability, if you were having a disagreement with MISO, to review these costs in that context annually, whereas if they were in base rates, whatever was included in base rates would, there and recovered from customers. So if there was anything that you disagreed with, I think you would have the ability to question those costs every year.
So it wouldn't be a monthly true-up where you're the...
No.
Okay.
No, we would ask for...
So then maybe it's not even a rider then. It may be different terminology, but okay. So annually you'd look at it during that time.
Yeah.
What is the benefit of this if we're doing a rate case with Xcel Energy every year?
Well, I guess our goal wouldn't be to file a rate case every year.
I would agree with that goal, but that's not what it has happened.
It has been happening recently because we've had rising costs recently, but over the longer term, what it would do is it would provide current recovery of costs that we consider that are, beneficial to all of our customers in that they're necessary to support our a reliable transmission system.
Okay. Would you agree that if we approve the transmission rider, you would not file a rate case for 3 years?
There could be, some rate mitigation discussions as a part of this case. We can, that's maybe one of the options.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
Thanks, yeah.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Since we brought this up, can you talk a little bit about, from a customer's standpoint, the rider, or from the company's standpoint, do these riders take away your incentive to hold down costs?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we still have, I think we still have within the company the oversight and management and desire to provide, these important investments in our system at the least cost for customers. But they're important to providing reliable service. So because we're making such significant investment in our transmission system, we believe that it's important to recover those costs as we go along.
What sort of mechanisms do we have as a commission with riders, and this being another major rider in addition to the fuel cost rider, to kind of review what's being committed to and what's being spent and kind of hold the line on the expenses?
So what we would do is propose to recover individual transmission projects in the rider. So you would have a chance annually to look at, new projects that we're requesting, as well as review the costs that we've incurred for projects that we've asked for previously, and the rider would include a true-up. So although, we would ask for to set the rate on a prospective basis, every year we would true-up our cost from the previous year and set a new rate for the new year and either return any over or under recovered cost to customers in the for that prospective year. So, there'd be constant review of, what our plans are, what our costs are, what we've previously requested, and what we actually did spend.
And is the company concerned at all that you'll come to us and we'll say after the fact, after mm-hmm. you've already made the investments, mm-hmm. no, we don't think you should be recovering that, and then you've got stranded costs?
Well, I would... all of our costs are subject to prudency. We believe that what we're doing is prudent, so we would hope that the commission would find our projects to be constructed in a prudent manner. But it's our burden to prove that the costs were incurred prudently and to the benefit of customers.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioner Chrisman, do you have any questions?
No other questions.
Your Honor, I had to follow up to the follow-up.
Okay. Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you. And to follow what Commissioner Fedorchak was talking about, I think it was a great line of discussion. But I'll tell you the way I would envision this working. You tell me how you'd see it differently. I would still envision the company coming in for an ADP on something. Mm-hmm. We would make a decision. And then instead of coming back for a rate case, you'd then file the tariffs. You probably would already have an ADP in hand before you filed the rider, mm-hmm. is the way I would envision that. You wouldn't change your procedures you have so far in ADPs.
No, I wouldn't expect that we would do that. However, I think the statute is...
You don't have to do that.
You don't... All projects that we would ask for recovery of wouldn't necessarily fall under the ADP statutes.
Because they're below jurisdiction threshold.
They may be, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Which is to your point.
Let me ask if there are any other questions from Mr. Johnson.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norrell.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Yes, I'm sorry. I am sorry, but this did open up a couple questions. Pat just showed me the tariff here on the iPad. We don't see a definition of transmission, and that was one of the questions Commissioner brought mm-hmm. up. What are we talking about? At a minimum, I think we need a definition in the tariff, you know, subject to Commission approval.
I believe that the tariff does say 69 kV or higher. From talking to Mr. Huso, I believe, or... Maybe Mr. Pepin, I can't remember.
Company
who.
Can double check.
Some other, yeah, we can just double check to make sure that's in the tariff.
I did not see in the statute any provision for revenues going through the tracker. Where do the MISO revenues that you might get back now for NSP transmission, where's that money going? Through the fuel adjustment or where?
No, the transmission revenues are credited to base rates.
Okay, so you're proposing that new ones would be run through the tracker, all would be run through the tracker, like when you get revenue from the Brookings line, we're talking the tracker for that, or base rates, or what?
Okay, because there's an amount included in the 2013 test year, assuming that the commission approves recovery of that. Because there's already amount in the test year, we would ask for any change to that amount in the rider. And that is only related to those RECB revenues. There are other transmission revenues that are a credit to base rates. This is just a subset of that transmission revenue.
Why treat them differently?
I believe they're specifically identified in the expenses are specifically identified in the statute.
Expenses, but why treat revenues differently? This is what I'm trying to get
well,
at.
Well,
I don't think the statute mentions revenues. That's why I'm asking.
I know, but, I believe that that's in the best interest of customers for both revenues and expenses related to regionally shared projects.
So you're saying just have an offset before you run the expense through?
Yeah.
Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's all. Thanks.
Does anyone have any more questions for this witness? All right. Thank you. And Mr. Johnson or Ms. Valley, who is going to be examining? Is it George Tyson?
Yes.
T-Y-S-O-N?
Correct.
All right. And we're going to need a couple of moments to hook him up. Is it going to be you, Mr. Johnson?
To
to handle the questioning?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to take just about 2 or 3 minutes to let Mr. Sheldon get us hooked up, but please don't wander off.
And Your Honor, as soon as he does that, I will call Mr. Tyson and tell him to call into the bridge.
Perfect.
Okay.